he enters again now in the Joseph story, and we have Connie coming up to read. Joseph finds himself, after the wonderful knowledge that his father and mother favored him, of the jealousy of his brothers. And his brothers tear that coat up. He's in a pit, and I often wonder if maybe this tune might have been part of his journey. So let's hear Connie share.
Genesis 37, 12 through 28. Now his brothers went to pasture their flock near Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, "Are not your brothers pasturing the flock at Shechem? Come, I will send you to them." He answered, "Here I am." So he said to him, "Go now, see if it is well with your brothers and with the flock, and bring word back to me." So he sent him from the valley of Hebron. He came to Shechem, and a man found him wandering in the fields. The man asked him, "What are you seeking?" "I am seeking my brothers," he said. "Tell me, please, where are they pasturing the flock?" The man said, "They have gone away, for I have heard them say, 'Let's go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after his brothers and found them at Dothan. They saw him from a distance, and before he came near to them, they conspired to kill him. They said to one another, "Here comes this dreamer. Come now, let us kill him and throw him into the pits. Then we shall say that a wild animal has devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams." But when Reuben heard it, he delivered him out of their hands, saying, "Let us not take his life." Reuben said to them, "Shed no blood. Throw him into this pit here in the wilderness, but lay no hand on him, that he might rescue him out of their hand and restore them to his father." So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the ornamented robe that he wore, and they took him and threw him into a pit. The pit was empty. There was no water in it. The word of God for the people of God.
So I'm going to try something a little bit different here. I'm going to tell a story of my dad, but I think it parallels Joseph's story quite a bit. So not that he had brothers that wanted to kill him, but he had his moments of the pit. And I heard this story because my sister Ida was with me, and I knew this story, but I didn't know some of the details. So I'm going to add a few. You may have heard a little bit of this story before. But it all starts about the railroad. And my dad grew up in a time in the 30s, during the Depression, and he was fascinated with trains. And I was watching a documentary, and here's just a little piece of this documentary about riding the rails.
Walk on, boy.
And now, Clyde, tell us about yourself.
Well, I'm from South Dakota, and my home's in Rapid City, a very small town. And I've got a girlfriend there, and the reason I'm in this large city is because she turned me down because I didn't have a job to show her good times. And she turned to someone that could.
And now, Charlie, will you tell us where you came from and how you got here and what your purpose was in coming?
Well, I came from Louisville, Kentucky, came on a freight train and for adventure.
For adventure? Most everybody that I know of that comes here is looking for a job.
Well, I'm different.
You couldn't catch the freight train usually in the yard unless it was real late at night and you spotted where the bulls were. That's the railroad police. And if you knew that they weren't on your trail, you could catch one slowly as the train was moving out of the yard. But generally speaking, especially in the daylight, you'd have to go just outside the yard. Therefore, you'd have to catch the train on the run.
Detectives, the railroad detectives, were patrolling with lanterns and a rifle up and down the tracks. But when that train started, when it, you know, it always jerks loose. And when it did that, this whole group of men just rose up like one person and rushed for that one door.
Well, my dad lived in a little town of Harrisburg, which was right near Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And so he loved to hop the train when he was a kid just to go to Sioux Falls, and then he would hop it and go back. But one time, he didn't go back. He was only 11 years old when he was hopping trains at first. And his older brother had found his dad. My grandpa kind of jumped ship, I would have to say, from our family. And so my grandma pretty much, she cleaned clothes and washed dishes for folks just to get by. They had five kids because the father had run out. But they had found out that he was in Denver. So his older brother, George, actually got sent a train ticket to go. So he got to go on a train ticket. But my dad was not included on that little ditty. So Dad, one day, 11 years old, if you can imagine, hopped a train and didn't stop at Sioux Falls and kept going all the way to Rapid City. And there at Rapid City, it wasn't quite Denver, a bull, that was what they called the folks with the billy clubs patrolling the trains, a bull found my dad and kicked him off the train and gave him a wallop on the leg and chased him away. And then, of all the things he did, he hitchhiked the rest of the way. And the story my sister told me was, well, this is my sister telling the tale now, so I don't get blamed for this, but he got picked up by a trucker. And it was not a semi, but a grain truck. And he jumped in, and the guy driving the truck was drunk and kept weaving all over the road. So finally he pulled over and said, "Could you drive?" So my dad, 11 years old, drove the truck as this guy passed out in the seat next to him all the way to Denver. And that's where he jumped out and he went to see supposedly my father and his brothers, or the uncles and his brother George. But when he got there, can you imagine? He's hoping to kind of hang out with Father. Father wasn't there, but there were two uncles, and they said, "You're not staying here. We don't have any food. George is here. He's got a job, but you're not going to be able to get a job. There's no way you're sticking around here. Get back home." And so, if you could imagine how he felt as 11-year-old, they didn't buy him a ticket either. They said, "Just find your way back." Now, there are a couple of interesting stories about this, just some facts about this kind of lifestyle. My dad wasn't the only kid on the railroad. There were a bunch of teenagers. They say maybe 250,000 teenagers rode the rails just like that during the 30s, just running away from home or trying to find work, or dads kicking or families kicking them out because they just didn't have enough food. There is a story of in one of these books I've been reading about a gal who was in an orphanage. And so she was in an orphanage, didn't have a mom or dad, but the orphanage ran out of food. So at 16, they said, "You're out." And they just kicked her out right there, didn't take her anywhere, didn't find any way to get anywhere, didn't give her any food. And she started hopping the rails. I mean, this is what was going on at this time. There's also a story in Cheyenne, Wyoming. I'm not trying to tell terrible stories about Cheyenne. No, Sheridan, Wyoming it was. That they arrested 35 kids who were on the train, and they put them in jail. And then when they got them out of jail, they put them in front of the police car and had them parade downtown, and all the people were supposed to spit on them and yell names at them and just say, "Get out of here, we don't want to ever see you again." I mean, can you imagine how you would feel about that? And so I'm thinking about my dad, right, getting the news that, you know, his brother didn't want him, his uncles didn't want him, his dad was nowhere to be seen, 11 years old, heading back home. And just thinking that feeling of being in a pit, I would think. And just how dangerous pits are, right? Because when we get in a pit, when we get in a place where we feel like we're not being loved, where we don't feel like there's a way to get out of anything, you're stuck, there's something about darkness, or you might say evil, that kind of gets their claws in you a little bit, kind of claws into your heart. And I often wonder, how did my dad not just turn and run the other way. I would have thought he would have just hopped trains and said, forget it. But he went home, got scolded by his mother, and he went back to school. Now, he's 12. He had skipped two grades. That was a common thing in those days. And so now he was in high school at 12. So he had skipped a couple grades. And so the cool thing that happened to him in high school, and there's not usually cool things that happen to high school kids sometimes, but was that he was able to be in a youth group. And this comes to another part of the story of Joseph's story. Joseph's in the pit. He doesn't get himself out of the pit. That's the interesting part of this story. Somebody comes by, and he's sold to slavery. There's an Egyptian that picks him up, right? So in some ways, this is also Israel's story. There are times in Israel's story when they are in a pit as a country, and they find a way out of it, that not on their own. Somebody comes and kind of pulls them out of it and rescues them. It happens a couple times in their history. And this happened to Joseph. And I'm saying it also happened to my father. Because when he started going to youth group, there was a pastor in Vermilion, South Dakota, which was where the university was, who picked kids up. They would walk to the highway, and he picked kids up every Sunday afternoon and drove them to Canton, South Dakota, where they had a youth meeting, a district youth meeting, and they met there every week. And my dad loved Jack Leach. He loved this pastor. He became kind of a father figure for my dad. And so when he graduated from high school, dad had no money, but Jack Leach found a way to get him to college. He stayed at the United Methodist Church in the basement of the United Methodist Church in Vermilion, South Dakota, where I actually served as a pastor at one point. I actually found a check that he had. He cleaned the church, and it was for $2.12, a week of cleaning the church. So he got by, and he found kind of a new life and a new way of getting by, and he found a safe place to be there at that university, there at that church. And so when I think of this story, I think often in our lives how some people are not able to get out of the pit they're in. We love to say that. Come on, you got to pull up your boots and get out. But there are some people, they're just too far in the pit. And we as a church are called to be there to help them get out of it. Not just help them and you know, keep helping them forever, but help them get their feet back on the ground so they can start living their life, just like my dad was able to do. And I think that's what we're called to be as a church, right? To do that kind of rescue work. Yesterday, I was working at Habitat for Humanity, and we had several folks from our church working there. It's a fascinating place. They've got, 40 houses they're building right now, duplexes, they're basically giving people a leg up, right? A chance to find a way to make it here in Seattle in the housing area. So what I'm trying to say here is our story and God's story are the same here, right? We are a people who sometimes get into pits, and we need folks to help us. One of the biggest things I've ever done in my life when just kind of spiritually and taking care of myself was so bad, I finally got the nerve up to say, I need to get a counselor. And so I raised my hand and I called somebody and I got that help. And that counselor helped me get out of that pit. She didn't do it on her own, but she helped me, and I needed that help. So sometimes it's us raising our hand and saying, I need help. I need help. But other times, as a church, it's us saying, we can help. We want to help. And so I hope as we continue on this journey, wherever you are, you know, maybe you've been someone like my dad who was pulled out of the pit, and then he spent the rest of his life helping others. Or maybe you're in that pit. Know this, that that's not where your story ends. Your story continues. And God is always trying to work with you on your side to help you make a better life of your story. And so all the people said, amen. Let's go ride a rail together.